authors, writers, dreamers, all. Each day is an invitation to accept the call. I'm Brooke Warner from She Writes.
And I'm Grant Faulkner from NaNoWriMo. You're listening to Right Minded, weekly inspiration for writers.
Hello, champions, warriors, advocates, and believers. Thank you for being with us on another episode of Right Minded. And today we're talking about an important topic, or two important topics that connect together sometimes in writing, which is writing and activism. And I'm here with Grant Faulkner, my co-host. And this is a pretty timeless topic we're going to tackle today, right, Grant?
Yeah. I sometimes actually think the act of writing is its own special kind of activism, because stories are the way we make meaning of the world. You know, stories are the main way we shape ourselves, and certainly the main way that we understand others. So even though I don't think of myself as an activist when I sit down to write, and I'm sure many, many writers don't think of themselves that way either, you might say that every writer is an activist just by putting the vision of his or her story into the world.
Yeah, I feel that way. And increasingly more as I get older and the more I interact with writers and see the kinds of things that people take on and the courage that it takes to do writing of all sorts. And today we're talking with Daisy Hernandez, and her writing career has been both driven and informed by her activism. So she's a really interesting guest, and you'll hear more about her later. I think it's important to talk about why people do activism in their writing. It seems pretty clear to me that there's an intersection here between our values, our identities, our passions, and that activism is also connected to a sense of injustice, right? A desire to see things made right, and probably also a desire to be seen. And Daisy speaks in her interview with us about the vulnerability in activism, which I also really appreciated, because it's just not something that we're seeing often enough, I think, in today's climate of activism.
Yeah. And I like to think, you know, we can fulfill our desires in our stories, but we also tell stories to explore the dark sides of life as well. And I'm talking about fictional stories in particular. And I think about the history of some novels that have actually changed the world. Uncle Tom's Cabin, which was written by Harriet Beecher Stowe. When Abraham Lincoln met her in 1862, he reportedly said, "So you're the little woman who wrote the book that started this great war." And that was a decade after she wrote Uncle Tom's Cabin, which was actually the second best-selling book of the 19th century after the Bible. And then I think of novels like The Jungle by Upton Sinclair, which, you know, really revealed to the world the plight of the working poor, and it even sparked an outcry over food hygiene in its story about immigrant laborers in Chicago's meatpacking industry. But it's not only realistic fiction. You know, Harry Potter, for instance, a lot of people think of that as just a fantasy story, but it inspired a whole movement of doing good in the world through the Harry Potter Alliance, a group that we work with at NaNoWriMo. And one of their beliefs, one of their kind of mission statements is, they say, "We know fantasy is not only an escape from our world, but an invitation to go deeper into it." And I think that really speaks to the power of fiction and activism.
Right. I love that. And because I'm always thinking about memoirs, I'll add memoirs into that mix, right? Because the core of so many memoirs are values of activism, you know, that people are really wanting to come and be seen, share their stories, share their struggles. And memoirists, self-help authors too, you know, they often come to the page because of their desire to help others or to write the book that they couldn't find when they were going through some big transition or hard time in their lives, something that they survived, you know, which is also a form of activism, I think, to share something that you've overcome and how you made it through. And I think of true activist memoirs I've read, you know, that would qualify maybe as activism in their helping others, things, eating disorder memoirs, books about issues around identity. And then lately there's been a resurgence in popularity about the immigrant experience, of course, just because of some of the stuff that we're grappling with in our country right now. And a couple of years back, I read a book called Good Girls Marry Doctors, South Asian American Daughters on Obedience and Rebellion. And that was a book that was edited by Biali Bhattacharya. And it was an anthology that reminded me very much of the kinds of books that I used to edit when I was at Steel Press, and reminiscent of our guest Daisy's first book, Colonize This, which was a collection about feminism through the lens of women of color. And this year, a memoir that's been getting a lot of attention is Sarah Saeedi's Americanized. The subtitle is Rebel Without a Green Card. And I think these kinds of books are such important contributions because they allow readers an opportunity to step into another person's experience, but beyond that, into a whole different understanding of the world. You know, sometimes the very country or region we live in, you know, you're having one experience and someone else is having a very different experience. And I think that's the power of activism through personal narrative.
Yeah. I'd like to acknowledge also a different kind of activism, Brooke, which is the kind of activism you do, advocating for writers to create a level playing field in publishing. And I think that's really important work because I know that there are a lot of things that need to be changed in publishing. And the obvious topic that occurs to me is how there have been so many reports for so many years of how slowly publishing is moving in terms of publishing women and people of color. You know, at NaNoWriMo, we work with groups like We Need Diverse Books. We believe our mantra that everyone's story matters because stories aren't just words, they're action. They shape how we view the world. I believe that the world is a better place when it includes more people's voices. You know, those voices help us understand where others are coming from. They help us be more empathetic and tolerant. Well, I know you share these beliefs, Brooke, but I'm curious if you could tell our listeners more about the specific ways in which you've channeled your activism in the book industry.
Yeah, well, thanks for asking. And thanks for bringing up that form of activism, too, because in addition to my work as publisher, I'm currently the chairperson of the Independent Book Publishers Association, and I sit on the advocacy committee, which is, you know, clearly about advocacy and therefore, I think, a form of activism. And at the last board meeting, we added to our vision statement that we wanted a publishing landscape in which everyone can find themselves in a story or in stories. And I think this echoes exactly what you're saying about everyone's story mattering and this value of diversity and inclusivity in needing to expand the view to include all kinds of people and experiences, and then not just promoting this homo or ethnocentric view of the world, which really, of course, has been what traditional publishing has been about for years and years and years. And there's a lot of pushback on that right now. And so to answer your question about my activism, yeah, I mean, I've been doing that through speaking and writing, which I think have been the most powerful tools to get the word out or the message out that I have, which is about the things that I deem to be unfair in this industry. So I'm coming at it from a sense of injustice, which drives a lot of activism. And there are a lot of things that I would like to see changed in this industry. Most importantly, and this seems so simple, is that a book should be judged on its content and for the writing and not about its pathway to publishing. You know, how did it get published? Was it published on Random House or Simon & Schuster? You know, those are the things that tend to matter to the publishing industry, or, you know, who paid for it or what advance you got, rather than is it a worthwhile book? You know, is it something that needs to be heard? This is the topic of my TEDx talk. So, and it comes out of my experience with She Writes Press, because we are a non-traditional model and therefore we confront some stigmas in this industry. And so I have this very personal investment in spreading these messages, and because the books that we work on and publish are beautiful and should be treated with the exact same kind of respect, I guess, as any other book. So I'd like to see a publishing world in which books get held up for their content or measured, you know, that's the measurement by which people are looking at them. And right now it's much more about author brand and celebrity than it should be. So anyway, I could go on and on and on here about the publishing industry, but I won't. People can read my thoughts in my book, Greenlight Your Book, and in my TEDx talk, which is online. But, you know, I appreciate having a minute to speak about those things that I'm passionate about. And yeah.
Well, thanks, Brooke. And speaking of Greenlight Your Book, which I've read and also recommend, I wonder if you can transition from that into today's Greenlight moment.
Yeah, I'm going to share and really give a shout out to one of my former clients, Willie Wilkinson, who is a trans author I admire. And he wrote a brilliant book called Born on the Edge of Race and Gender. You know, I often think that identity and these issues around, you know, how you self-identify and how you walk in the world just sort of inherently become activist topics. And these, you know, books by trans authors resonate with me because I worked on so many of them during my time at Seal Press. And Willie wrote a really important book. But it was also a niche book. You know, he had the foresight to know that the big presses would pigeonhole his work. And he had this great online presence, and he makes a living with his speaking and his trainings. And so the definition of a green lighter is someone who either has the confidence or builds the confidence over time to know that their work matters and that it will find its audience no matter what. And Willie wrote a book that was as good or better than anything I ever worked on during my time at Seal Press. And he just decided that he was going to go his own way with it. And to his credit, he did that. He did go ahead and create his own imprint and self-published it and put it out into the world. And I know for him, it's been an incredibly positive experience. And, you know, this is just the same old story of the traditional publishing world saying there's no more space for that, and him saying, you know, indeed there is, and it has found its audience, of course. And so we just see this time and time again. So what's your pep talk today, Grant?
Yeah, it kind of builds, I think, on Willie's confidence to know that his work mattered. I'd like to talk about creative defiance. I think an artist is by definition a menace to conformity to some degree. Menace is a good word in this context. The underlying purpose of deciding to write is to bring forth this mysterious and sacred gift within ourselves, to touch, revere, and express the truth of the way we see this crazy world. So I think if you put your story in a cage of others' rules, your imagination will always reside behind bars. So I urge people to reflect on those moments where people have dismissed or disrespected your writing pursuits. Ask yourself, did you shrink? Did you defer? Did you become silent? And then to think about ways to actually rebel, to defy the expectations they're setting for you. So I put this as like, commit the crime of being yourself and write your story. That's the best kind of activism for me, because you're putting your voice into the world, and we need those voices to further our understanding of people in the world.
We need them so badly, and we need the readers too. So go out and do it and read these books and promote these books. And thanks for that, Grant. All right, we'll be right back after a break with Daisy Hernandez. We are back with our guest, Daisy Hernandez, and Daisy is the author of the award-winning memoir, A Cup of Water Under My Bed, and the co-editor of Colonize This, Young Women of Color on Today's Feminism. She's the former editor of Color Lines magazine, and she's reported for The Atlantic, The New York Times, and Slate, and she's written for NPR's All Things Considered and Code Switch. Daisy's essays and fiction have appeared in Asterix, Bellingham Review, Brevity, Dogwood. I love these lists, because every time we have a guest, I'm just like, God, these people are prolific. And Daisy, absolutely. Rumpus and others. Contributing editor for the Buddhist magazine Tricycle, Daisy is also an assistant professor in the creative writing program at Miami University in Ohio. So Daisy, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you for having me.
So when I got to Seal Press in 2004, that was when I got the job as an acquiring editor at Seal, your book, Colonize This, Young Women of Color on Today's Feminism, was one of the press's success stories. So I've always known you as an activist writer, just because the subject matter of that book in a lot of ways was revolutionary when it was published in 2002. And so I'm wondering if you could talk about the impact of Colonize This on your writing career, and to what extent did that experience shape where you went from there?
That's a fantastic question. Yeah, that was a life-changing book for me. And I think too, for my co-editor and for a lot of the women in the book. We worked really closely with the writers for that book. For the first edition, we had 28 young women, and my co-editor and I split the list, and we were on long-distance phone calls with people and going through many, many drafts. And I saw so much courage and willingness from these women that really inspired me in terms of being willing to write into difficult material, being willing to say, I don't know what to say at this point on the page. Just that willingness to be vulnerable, which a lot of times does not get associated with activism. You know, we hear the word activist and we, you know, think, you know, fist and, you know, protest signs and marching. And, but there's a certain kind of activism that comes from that vulnerability. There's amazing stories that I think really connect with other people. And so I think that really shaped me in terms of writing my own memoir. It really impacted how I came to the page, realizing like, okay, I need to be as willing as they are to admit when I don't know something, when I'm feeling vulnerable about something. And that one of the great joys in reading personal essays, and I would also say in writing personal essays, is that we really get to see a writer's mind at work on the page. And I really took that from the anthology experience, that like part of the joy is seeing where my mind is going to take me, even though I might know the subject. I don't actually know where my mind is going to take me about that subject.
Daisy, I love how you defined activism, or how you integrate vulnerability into your definition of activism. Just this morning, I was talking with my wife and made the observation that I think we're living in this age of certitude, where so many people kind of think they have certain answers, and that leads to righteousness. Whereas I wish we lived in a world of an age of doubt, which includes vulnerability, and includes questions, and includes conversations. And so I'm curious if you could talk to us a bit about the evolution of your experience of activism and writing. Was it something you set out to do, or was it more accidental?
That's another great question. I knew at a young age that I wanted to spend my life writing. I grew up in a working class community. My parents worked in factories. So I didn't know exactly what that would look like. I didn't know if I was going to be working in factories and then coming home and writing. I didn't know any professional writers, but I had a really strong sense of purpose. And for me, like, the word purpose is another word for activism. So I knew that I wasn't seeing the stories, neither in books nor on TV, about my community and my family. And so to me, I definitely always came to the writing, I would call it with a sense of purpose, but we can absolutely call it with a sense of activism, that I was going to be telling these stories that I wasn't seeing elsewhere and that I desperately needed to read. There's a lot of urgency for me as a writer with what I do. I need to see these stories on the page. I'm not seeing them elsewhere. I'm not satiated in any way. And then, you know, what's happened since then, and then I did Colonize This, and I wrote my own memoir, and I've worked as a journalist as well. And that definitely has been the theme, like, that sense of purpose / activism has been at the center of everything. But, you know, I often go back to something that Toni Morrison has said about her first novel, which is that she wrote The Bluest Eye because that was the book that she needed to read. And I feel like I worked on Colonize This because that was the book that I needed to read. And I wrote my memoir because that was the book I needed to read. And the journalism stories that I've pitched done as labors of love have definitely come from that same place. Like, I desperately need to read this. I need to create this. I need to see it in the world.
Well, and Daisy, you wrote your memoir. I should say your memoir was published. I don't know how long it took you to write. Maybe you'll share with us. But A Cup of Water Under My Bed came out in 2014. So there were 12 years between these two book projects. And obviously, you were working on a million other things in the interim. And I understand that you have a book in progress right now. So how do you balance everything you do? And what are your priorities when it comes to writing?
I don't know how I balance everything do. That seems to really vary from week to week. And we are doing a second edition of Colonize This that's coming out in February of 2019. And you know, it's the balancing act has looked really different at different points in my life. I would say that during my dedicated journalism years, when I was actually with a particular magazine or newspaper, I was definitely writing in bits and pieces on weekends. When I worked on Colonize This, the first edition, I did not have a job, so that was great. I was living in my parents' house, and that first edition is very parentally supported by, I didn't have to pay rent and food while I lived there. And so that made it possible, actually. But yeah, during the journalism years, it was on weekends, and there did come a point, actually, where I saw that I had these essays that could take the shape of a book. I did not know that I was writing a memoir. I just had these essays on the computer. And I started to realize, wait a minute, actually, I think this could come together as a book. And so at that point, I made the big decision that, you know, some people who work 9 to 5 have to make at some point when they're also artists, which is, can I cut back my hours and still pay the rent and groceries and everything? And so I did. I scaled back spending and I cut back. I forgot what the hours are now. I think I cut back to like 32 hours. So I had an extra day during the week and I wasn't having to get up so early. I know this sounds a little dramatic sometimes, but I think it's important for me to say, like, I chose to not have children. And I see, you know, a really huge difference, you know, in making that decision. Not that anyone gets more time or less time, because I have friends with children who are incredibly more prolific than I could ever hope to be. But it is a reality that there was a time period where I could balance things out because I could wake up at 5 a.m. and I was had the place to myself and my sweetie wasn't bothering me or whatever, right? So there's that, the reality of the situation as well includes that. And nowadays, I try to keep a lot of my teaching activities to very specific days and have like dedicated writing days, you know, and I think every writer does some version of balancing it that way.
Daisy, you've written a lot of articles, including one called Becoming a Black Man, about the experiences of Black trans men, and that was nominated for GLAAD Media Award. And you've also had a commentary on NPR that went viral a few years back. I was wondering, can you talk to us about the experiences of your work getting that kind of attention? And is that what you're setting out to do with writing that has an activist focus?
I am definitely not setting out to do that. Yeah, I think it's completely impossible to set out to do that. I know some people do and are successful, but I just find that, it doesn't feel fulfilling to me to set out to, this will go big. That just doesn't feel fulfilling to me in the right way. As I'm writing, that doesn't feel good to me. It doesn't speak to my heart, I guess, is what it is, right? Like, it's for me, the writing part has to come more from a place of that urgency and that purpose. And when I did that particular article where I was interviewing trans people of color to see what their experiences had been like after transition and before, that really came from a place of myself being in a relationship with a trans man who's Chicano and just our conversations and just realizing like, gosh, I actually haven't seen a magazine piece about this. Like, why aren't we talking about it in print? And so there's a lot of urgency around that, and it came from that place. And then I think it's, for me, it's much better to work that way. And then, because ultimately I don't feel like I can control the outcome. So then if it's if it's an outcome that gets attention, it's kind of a little boost. But at the end of the day, even if something goes viral, like the piece for NPR, it's a lot of noise for a little while, and then the noise is over and you're back at your writing desk and then it's done. But the NPR story was a little more of a surprise because, you know, my face was, a photo of me was shown on Fox on Bill O'Reilly's show, and people were calling for me to get fired. And I'm like, I'm just a freelancer. I don't actually work for NPR full time.
Daisy, can you give a tiny context for listeners who...
I'm sorry. Yeah. So this was when our Senator, Gifford, was shot. And one of the things that I wrote was that, the debate politically was so tense around immigration at that particular moment. When me and my friends and my family turned on the news, you know, we kind of had this hope of don't let the shooter be a Latino, because there's already so much, you know, so much negative media attention and so forth around immigrants and criminal activity. And so, you know, actually turned out to be a white guy, but it ended up becoming controversial because I called the white guy a gringo. And for some people, that's a disparaging word from Spanish. And for me, coming from a Cuban and Colombian community and family, it's a very neutral word. It just means white. So it just depends how you say it. But conservative folks, politically conservative folks, took that as that they were allowing this like sassy Latina woman to cuss out white people on radio. I think that's how they were framing it. And I did actually try to interact with the commentators for a little while, like the first and second evening of that hoopla. And then I just saw that, you know, people weren't interested in finding out how Spanish gets used in different communities. They were just, they didn't like public radio to begin with. They didn't like NPR to begin with. So they were kind of looking for fuel.
Yeah, so you had a pretty intense experience of being trolled. And it's also interesting this that the negative resonance can kind of tend to last a little longer, I think. So
absolutely.
We at National Novel Writing Month, we always tell, you know, we urge people to write their story their way, to write their truth. And so I'm curious, what advice do you have to writers who want to put a stamp on things, who are interested in rising above the noise when it comes to writing about issues they care about?
Yeah, that's a great question. I generally tell writers, you know, you have to start with what feels really urgent. If you knew that you only had the rest of 2018 to write, and you weren't going to get to write in 2019 for whatever reasons, because I think that urgency really lights a fire under you, but it can also really clarify what the story is. A lot of times I think we get distracted because we want to do too much and are afraid to say, this is it. I'm going to put my eggs in this basket. But I think there's another way to look at it, which is that it's not about, you know, fear of making a decision or just putting the eggs in one basket, but like, this basket has chosen me. I have urgency. I need to have this basket with these eggs in this basket. No, and I think it's very much like National Novel Writing Month, right? Where it's like, okay, I've got this time frame. And so to connect with that sense of urgency, I think is really, really important. Something that, you know, Maria Hinojosa said one time, she's a longtime journalist, just an amazing woman. And I heard her at a conference once, and I got to ask her, you know, how does she choose her stories, actually? How does she choose what she covers as a journalist? And I feel like the advice she gave me is really applicable to the arts across the way. She says that what she said to me was, and the audience, was that if she's calling like her best friend to tell her about something, like that's usually a story. Like she starts to pay attention to what she's feeling a need to tell others. And, you know, for me, it's very political, you know, even what I'm sharing on Facebook yesterday is like very political. And that's what's like on my mind. And so, of course, that comes out in my creative writing process. And for someone else, you know, I have a wonderful friend who's writing a book about mothering and how to do that in a progressive political way. Right. And so that's what's up and urgent for her. So, yeah. Does that make sense? Did I answer your question?
For sure. Yes. I thank you. Okay. You nailed it. And it's been super interesting to listen to you, Daisy, and just really appreciate the work that you do in the world and how you talked about things today. So thank you for being with us.
Thanks so much, Daisy.
Thank you.
Today's Writing Action is about reframing activism as passion. So the exercise is simple. Think about what you're passionate about. Consider the conversation we've been having today about activism outside of traditional political and policy boxes. If your own passions fall there, that's perfect. But if not, what are the core messages you care about? Are there any prevalent messages that shine through when you're writing? And what happens when those things show up? Do you move toward those ideas or shy away from them? Are you conscious of being assertive around issues you care about, or do you tend to tamp them down for fear of alienating your readers? There's no right or wrong in this exercise, so that's important to keep in mind. It's just about taking a look at how activism might be informing your writing, even in the absence of what you might think of as activism, as we've been discussing a bit today. Sometimes figuring out where your passions are can also lead to supplementary books, which is surprising sometimes to people. So I've had this experience where a novelist or a memoirist is touching upon some issue that they really, really care about. And then they realize, oh my gosh, I have more to say on this topic. This is something I care about. It's my platform. I want to write more about it in a nonfiction perspective or a self-help perspective. So those things can happen. There are so many ways to be an activist. And if the word itself doesn't ring true to you, that is fine. Call it something else. You know, call it your passion, call it your calling, call it whatever. But don't be afraid to articulate in your writing your ideas and opinions that align with those passions and values.
Thanks so much, Brooke. Right Minded is a weekly podcast. I hope our listeners will be activists in the sense of actively downloading it on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you do listen, please rate the podcast and give it a review. That helps us get more visibility, more listeners. So we'll see you next time. Thanks a lot.